This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp. As a podcast listener, you've heard from us before. Today, let's hear from our members about what online therapy has done for them.
I would recommend my therapist 1,000 times over. She has truly changed my life.
The day after my first session, my friends and family said I sounded like myself again for the first time in weeks.
You deserve to invest in your well-being. Visit BetterHelp.com to see what it can do for you. That's BetterHelp.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench.
Hello and welcome back to Fighting on Film. This week, we bring you Land of Bad. It's a Special Forces meets Behind Enemy Lines meets Prisoner of War.
Extraction genre.
Extraction subgenre. Yeah. And it's one of those films that have had a limited release and then appeared online. But before we get into that, I just wanted to thank everyone on Bermuda who has been listening to the pod, because this week Rob and I found out that we are actually the 43rd best film pod on Bermuda.
Oh, I know. Hello to all the Bermudians out there.
Yeah, big up to them. Very much appreciated.
Yeah.
A little bit of housekeeping. Please do check out warfaremedia.net. We are currently partnered with them, and you can get a rather good discount, I think, of 20% if you use the code FOF20 at checkout. They have a huge plethora of really cool military and more specifically Cold War themed posters, which are made up of original ads from the period, posters, recruitment posters, bits from training manuals, all kinds of really cool stuff. Definitely do go and check them out. So before we move on to Land of Bad, we're going to go with Rob's large question.
Rob's large question. And if anyone wants to sponsor the large question, I'm well up for that.
Oh my God. Can someone please sponsor Rob's large question?
Yes. Please sponsor the large
question. We are open to renaming it Rob's big one as well, if needed.
So this week's large question is, you have a decent budget to remake a pre-2000 war film. What is it and why? And we had quite a good response from the listenership over on Twitter. Please check us out on there if you are not yet following. Lots of war movie fun and frolics. So starting off, we have Kevin Getz, who goes with Midway, because the current updated version is hot garbage and tries to do too much. And enough of the CGI violation of physics flying. The 70s film lost me when I saw Tora 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 clips in it. I kind of agree.
That's
on that
fair.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. The Tora 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 clips do pull you out of Midway. Although it's, you know, both of those films have merits, but they do have, you know, things that, that detract.
I admire what the newer one was trying to do. Because in my response,
but I don't think they deserve a remake, though. Going to disagree with Kevin there. Ooh. They've just had one. They don't need another one.
Controversial.
Let all the films have remakes.
Getz Industries can make what Getz Industries wants.
True, that's true. But he should really be focusing on that film about Operation Dead Stick.
Yeah, but that's a tricky second film, isn't it? So Tom McCall goes with a bit of heresy, because I love David Niven, but I'd go for the Sea Wolves and ditch the 1970s outfits. Totally agree on that.
I would use AI to recreate the entire film using the original cast. Just remove the 70s outfits.
I said a decent budget. I didn't say a studio killing budget, Matt. Tom added to this, because I quite liked it, so I'm going to read it in full. He put, starring role would have to go to Gary Oldman, but I would definitely want Hopkins and Ian McKellen up front with the boarding party. Maybe influenced by watching a bit too much Gavin and Stacey, but I want Larry Lamb in it and Ian McNeice as one of the old boys at the club, which I really liked. And then I said, yes, but we need Patrick Stewart in the Niven role at the start too.
Oof. Yeah.
I think that'd be very good.
Yeah. That would be that. Malcolm McDowell as well.
Yes. Marcus Cripp goes with Battle of the Bulge, so we can have a German tanks that, so we can have German tanks that look German. Also, some trees in the Ardennes forest wouldn't go amiss. Totally agree there.
Some actual snow would be nice.
Yeah. Jake says, a hill in Korea. The Korean War deserves at least one big budget film. Remake would be based on the Gloucester's Last Man Stand against the Chinese. I mean, who wouldn't want an Imjin film?
Yeah,
you know, it's the
fact that hasn't been made.
Yeah,
even by a relatively small studio is shocking.
Yeah. It would be
missed opportunities as well for the anniversary.
Massively so.
And never forgive them for that one.
I know, right. Bill 1940 middle campaign goes with The Longest Day, but I'd cast age-appropriate actors. I'm looking at you, John Wayne, and make sure the Canadians are in it this time. Another one. Agree with that. Yeah.
Age-appropriate actors in film roles. It's never going to happen.
That's a big ask.
It's definitely not happening this week, but anyway.
That's a big ask. Paul Burns goes with The Hunt for Red October. Do like a sub movie and maybe use someone who can speak Russian for the lead role. Yeah. Rodri Morgan Smith says The Big Red One, great premise, but really obviously filmed on a low budget. Disclaimer, I haven't seen the reconstruction version, but no, I agree.
Well, Fuller wanted, he wanted the budget, you know, he spent years trying to get it off the ground, didn't he? Yeah.
And we'll have one last one before we do our own, and we'll have Hibernius Scholar goes with When Trumpets Fade. It was a TV movie about the Battle of Herkimer Forest and before the Battle of the Bulge. Always liked it. I agree on that one.
Well, we've done it on the pod.
It's good, but it's not, as the advert says, it's good, but it's not quite Carling. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's almost there.
We said pretty much that on the show when we did it. It must be 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it was summer.
If you're a new listener in Bermuda, head back and check that one out.
Yeah, I think
that's,
we did.
That's a good episode.
We did the Herkimer Forest film because it was boiling hot. We had a heat wave, didn't we? We thought if we do a movie with cold in it, it might cool us down.
Yeah, well, we couldn't do Battle of the Bulge because there's no snow in that.
No, famously no snow. Yeah. So Matt, what's your remake? What's Moss Inc. gonna make?
Moss Inc. is proud to launch Nine Men 2025.
Amazing. We love to hear it.
Where we return to that beach in Wales and we film the exact film, scene for scene.
It's a shot-for-shot remake, is it?
Shot-for-shot remake. More or less. We'll include some more interesting bits and bobs and we'll give it a bit more scale. But we won't go too far.
Can we have the Scottish chap from Line of Duty playing the sergeant?
Oh, yeah. He'd be good, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I would say you could probably try and get in Peter Capaldi in there too.
As what?
As Bagger Hill.
Really? Is he not too old?
Well, there's the old chap in there. There is that old chap.
Well, I suppose he is, yeah. Bagger's a little bit, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Peter's not too old.
Who's playing the lad?
It's gonna be Harry Styles.
Oh, okay. Getting the youngsters in.
We're gonna blow most of the budget on getting him acting lessons. Just getting him up to standard, and then
oh my god, okay. I like it.
And then we'll have Stephen Graham as the guy that had the boys' anti-tank rifle.
Oh god, yes, please. Oh, I'd love to see that.
I thought you'd like that. Yeah,
that'd be sweet. Yeah, no, I love it.
What about you?
Mine is people might have seen on Twitter. But I said I would remake Went the Day Well and replace the setting to the late 70s or early 80s and have it as a Soviet Spetsnaz infiltration of a cozy British village.
Yeah, but that's not a remake. That's a reimagining.
Yeah, but it's a remake still. You can
okay.
You can blur it a bit. All yeah, right. Because it's an adaptation.
Yeah,
you know. So right. I've said, home service force arrive to save the day. A commandeered Bedford RL must be blown up by Bedford. By a Law anti-tank launcher, and Helen Mirren to dispatch a solvent axe and a splash of pepper.
Ooh. Yeah. She takes a hand grenade into the pantry. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. But it's a Soviet, one of those little egg ones they have.
Yeah, it's one of the RDG-5, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. And they're uncovered where one writes in acrylic by mistake. And they go, that's not the Queen's English.
That's Cyrillic, that is.
That's
look at those squiggly letters he's written.
That A's got an extra bit at the top. That's
someone
not right.
Someone better call the home service force. It's quick. That,
I thought something was queer when he said his name was Artyom, and I thought that's not a British name.
Yes. Perfect. And fantastic. it happens on the weekend of the FA Cup final.
Oh, please. Yes. Yeah. And it's in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Keegan has scored.
I'll let you pick whichever one, whichever year you want to set that on.
Oh, God. I had no idea. Off the top of my head. Whatever the one Coventry are in, because that's nice and nostalgic. Because there's beautiful Admiral kits with the stripes. Don't get me started. Right, anyway, on to Land of Bad. And I am on cast this week, so without further ado. First up, we have Liam Hemsworth as Sergeant J.J. Kenny. He's brother to Chris Thor Hemsworth and fellow cast member Luke Hemsworth. So it's a bit of a family affair, this one. His credits include The Expendables 2, Love and Honour, Independence Day Resurgence and The Duel. Then we have Luke Hemsworth. He was in Thor Ragnarok and Thor Love and Thunder. Next Goal Wins. And I think he's probably best known for playing Ashley Stubbs on Westworld.
Yes. Not bad, then,
not bad at all, no. No, they're all... This is the thing about this cast. They're all very competent actors.
Yeah, that's very
fair. Nothing wrong with the cast at all here. Then we have, you know, the big budget name in a movie like this, in a lower budget, you know, limited release streaming movie, you always get a big name in. And boy, golly, did they get a big name. They got Russell Crowe to play Captain Eddie Grimm, call sign Reaper. He's the movie's like drone operator. He's their eye in the sky. He's obviously an Oscar and BAFTA winning New Zealand born actor. Started his career in the 1990 PAL film Blood Oath. Other credits include Romper Stomper, Gladiator, LA Confidential, LA Confidential, Cinderella Man, Proof of Life, which I think he plays an ex-SAS operator in that.
Is he?
Yeah, I remember. It's the movie where the two people get kidnapped and then this man hires someone to go and get them out. And I think Russell Crowe plays like an ex-SAS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Isn't he like a negotiator type sort?
Yeah, like SASR
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
And he was also in The Water Diviner and a couple of years ago, the Vietnam War film, The Greatest Beer Run Ever. I read a review that said Crowe seems to be in his character acting era. And I think he's really knocking it out of the park. He's due to play Hermann Göring in an upcoming Nuremberg film.
Yeah.
If you've seen the pictures of that, he looked pretty convincing, I've got to admit. So we look forward to that one.
You missed out Master and Commander.
Of course, Master and Commander. I knew there was something. Only seen that film once, actually.
Oh.
I didn't drop that on the show. And then we have Ricky Whittle as Sergeant Bishop. He's the team's sniper. He's a Mancunian actor who started his career in the Sky football drama Dream Team, and that is the only time we are ever going to be able to mention that goated show on the pod.
Your absolute faves.
Oh, love it. Harchester United forever. He was also he was also in the Channel 4 soap Hollyokes. That might be the only mention of the Hollyokes ever gets on the show. Okay. And then he sort of lately has branched out into American TV roles, and he's been in The 100, Mistresses, and most recently had quite a prominent role in American Gods. So he's doing very
well. Play to his agent, like knocking out the park for him there.
I know, right? Yeah,
going from Dream Team to US TV. Wow.
Yeah. Amazing. Then we have Milo Ventimiglia. He plays Master Sergeant John Sugar Sweet. He's been in That's My Boy, Killing Season, Creed 2, but his TV roles are quite prominent. He was Jess in Gilmore Girls. It's one of, crikey, I watched all of Gilmore Girls at Revelations on the show this week. And I can't remember the guy's name, but he plays one of the boyfriends of the lead girl. Then he was Peter in Heroes. Did you see Heroes?
No.
I didn't see Heroes, no.
I know it was a big thing at the time.
Big
I
thing.
Believe.
And he also has done a little bit of work for Marvel as the voice of Wolverine in the Marvel animes, Blade, Wolverine and Iron Man in the 2010s. So that's quite something. Then we have Chika Ikogwe. I hope I'm saying that right. As Staff Sergeant Nia Branson. She's Crow's Reaper's sort of partner.
Co-pilot.
Colleague. Yeah. Co-pilot, yeah. She's an Australian actress. She's been in a few roles of late, but she's quite a new on the scene, so she only has a few credits under her belt. She was in Mickey versus the World, The Tourist, and Godzilla versus Kong, The New Empire. And then kind of rounding out the cast, because there aren't, apart from the Delta team and Crow and Chika, there aren't many other people really in it of prominent note. So we have Robert Rabia, a Saheed Hashimi. He's leader of the Abu Sayyaf Rebels, the movie's main antagonist, the big bad. He's an Australian actor. He was in Chopper, the cult American cult Australian movie. He was in On the Beach, but his TV roles are a lot more sort of war movie related, with Tomorrow When the War Began, Deadline Gallipoli, and of course the Australian soap Neighbours.
That's a real war movie right there.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
When good become good friends, or wherever it went. It's that show where you'd always watch it if you're off sick. Neighbours.
Yeah. I stopped watching it when Harold drowned or like faked his own death or something.
Matt couldn't cope.
Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, so yeah.
Or when the doctor was having an affair. What are you doing that to your wife, Kennedy? Right. What are you doing?
Revelations on Neighbours every week.
He's still in that. He was on Last Leg, talking about being on it when it was getting relaunched. Yeah.
Fair play.
Anyway.
Gotta get that Neighbours bag.
Random.
Anyway. Yeah, so as with these kind of behind enemy lines, we need someone to get us out kind of movies, there is sort of a small cast anyway, kind of like Bat 21, where
there
aren't that many major players. But I think everyone's very competent. I think they work with what they've got, but we'll talk more about that as we go along. So Matt, production this week, then we've got the one-word reviews and the review segment.
So the film was filmed in September, November 2022, principal photography being undertaken on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia. And the prominent dam that features is the Hinds Dam, and that's in Advancetown, Australia.
Okay, so that maybe might work. Well, there's a lot of Aussie actors in this then.
It is, and it seems to have been a very... There's only one American actor in this, I think, and then the rest are either British or Australian, as you said.
Yes.
So it feels like it was a very Australian sort of like led picture. Although the director and the screenwriter were both American. The film was directed by William Eubank, who's a director, screenwriter, and perhaps best known as being a cinematographer. He's done three films previously, three or four, which include Love and The Signal. They're both sci-fi films, and then more recently Underwater, which was a horror piece. It was written by Eubank and David Frigiero, who is an American screenwriter and producer, and he's worked with Eubank previously on The Signal, and he's done a number of other small films and some TV stuff. Interestingly, I found that both the writer and the director, they shadowed a real JTAC for two weeks. Although that was after they'd written the script, so I'm assuming they kind of did the shadowing and then made tweaks afterwards get some more bits and bobs in. Yeah. The film was actually originally going to be titled JTAC, after JTAC. JTAC meaning Joint Terminal Attack Controller, which is something that the US military introduced in the early 2000s. And it's essentially, forward air control, that kind of thing. But it's, you know, it's more satellite stuff and drone feeds.
I think Land of Bad is better, but it's not perfect. There's definitely a better title for this movie.
I mean, it's literally like, I think it's Bishop that like holds up his forearms and he's got Land of Bad written on them.
Yeah, yeah. And, but it's
We'll talk a little bit more about that scene later on because that's the most cerebral part of the film, I think, that conversation they have.
Oh, about like human warfare and all that.
Technology coming into war.
Yeah.
Cinematography was by Augustin Claremont, who's a cinematographer from Uruguay, and he has a handful of credits, but he's clearly very competent because I think the film's actually really quite well shot in terms of depth and getting a lot of dynamics into it and some of the interesting camera angles that they use. And it's clearly a dynamic film and there's lots of, you know, tracking shots and overheads and there's lots of really good night fights, I would say.
Like not bad.
The night firefight was quite good.
Yeah, everything's okay, you know.
The score was provided by Brandon Roberts, who's worked on a lot of TV, film and games. He did the orchestration for Battlestar Galactica. He worked on World War Z, Logan, A Quiet Place, A Quiet Place 2, and that Fear Street show that was out a couple of years ago as well. Then we've got a couple of mentions for advisors and stunts. Mick Van Morsel provided the stunt double for Russell Crowe. He had a very easy job because I don't believe Russell Crowe did any stunts in this film. Maybe it was a stunt driver. I don't know when he was doing that fast toy, driver.
Pushing that cart later in the film was just terrible on his back, you know.
When he ran through that door. that was a big stunt.
After Gladiator, don't bloody run anymore. You're going to have to get someone in.
We got Paul Kael.
Beck's gone again.
The knees, lads. We've got Paul Kael as the military advisor. And this is his first film credit. He's a serving member of the Australian Army at the moment. And he's a veteran with the 1st Commando Regiment and the 2nd Commando Regiment when it was formed. And he did 5 deployments in Afghanistan and Iraq. So he's a special operator background, which is handy for the film because he'll probably work with Delta at some point. We have Michael Spearings, who is the consultant in terms of the drone, the MQ-9 Reaper drone, which is heavily featured. And this is his first credit. I couldn't really find any information on his background. And then finally, we have Daniel Potts, who provided armory services. And he was a former member of the Australian Army with deployments in Iraq, as Afghanistan as well. He runs the Rifleman's Armory, which he set up in 2018. His credits include The Crater, a true Vietnam War story from 2015, Occupation from 2018, Battalion of the same year. They're both like military sci-fi movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's done lots of small movie and TV work in Australia.
Very nice. Yeah. Anything on budget?
We have a budget of 18.7 million, which isn't bad at all.
Very small for a film like this.
Yeah, it is. And considering it only had a limited release in January, February this year, before it moved onto the streaming platforms, it made 6.5 million in the US, which isn't bad for a limited release.
It's not shocking.
That's half of its budget back.
Yeah. So you want about 40-50 to be all right. Yeah. No, that's not bad. And it's currently on Prime in the UK, so I assume it's on Prime in America. It's very easy to watch and find this one this week.
And this week, for a change of pace, I have the review, and it comes from The Guardian. And this is a review that was published on the 1st of May. So it's a very new review. And it's Land of Bad. Russell Crowe marches in an explosive action thriller. And Rob, this got 3 stars out of 5.
Blimey.
Bloody high praise for The Guardian because they find it very difficult to give films sometimes.
They do.
This is why we don't do star ratings on the podcast.
No.
But
because they're meaningless at the end of the day.
They really are. Really? Reviews are subjective. We know this.
Exactly.
So I'll read you a little bit from the conclusion. This is a film that has trained us to enjoy its explosions and set pieces, but makes the outcomes seem less important, perhaps due to an attempt to turn the film into a parable about the flagging commitment of the most modern soldiers to the principles of being a good soldier. This may not be a topic close to most people's hearts, but skilled storytelling can make you care about anything. Look at the life and death of Colonel Blimp from 1943. What a wild, off-the-dome reference for a classic that can make anyone connect with the pathos of a veteran commander grappling with a less principled army than the one he grew up with. Land of Bad beats Blimp to Stunt. Go again. Land of Bad beats Blimp on stunt work, though, so that's a plus.
I mean, yeah, obviously.
Is that what you take away from Life and Death of Colonel Blimp?
Should have been more explosions.
Yeah, should have been more explosions. And he was grappling with the fact the army was less principled. I didn't. Okay.
He should have beat that Home Guard member to a bloody pulp for not starting war at midnight.
But yeah, isn't that an unusual review?
A little bit. I mean, I read a few reviews after I watched the movie, and it was like a general consensus of kind of, yes, it's okay, mm-hmm. you know, like a lot mm-hmm. of praise for Crow, which is nice to see. But yeah, I mean, that's a very out there review, but I think it's fair to a point. I don't agree with all
They're
of
almost
it.
Almost basing their conclusion there on that one conversation.
Yeah, and it's a very, very small conversation.
Yeah, and it doesn't, yeah. that isn't the crux of the film.
It's not, no. I mean, I don't think there really is a crux, is there? No. Anyway, so what did you guys think? As always, we ask for your one-word reviews, and let me get them up. I'm going to leave this in. We do search the one-word reviews up live most weeks. Where the heck is it? There it is. So, one-word reviews. We had about 20-odd replies, which is quite good because this movie came out literally weeks ago over here. So, Paul Hicks says, fearful after watching the trailer. Ian McClellan goes with tiresome. Brian Williams, bombed. Mark Barnes, daft. Will says, Reaper. Brad Holloway says, Hollyoaks, ? Tom McCready, explosive. Johnny Doyle, load of bad. Very good. He did put it as one word. Major Sharp went, just put 6 out of 10. I guess that's one word, I guess, in a way. No, yeah. Probably not. Simon Gibbons goes with sound. Little Big Worlds goes vegan, capital letters. The Wargamers Forum goes with Bat21. And Ian Greenfield rounds us off this week with entertaining. So a mixed bag.
Very mixed bag.
You know, as you'll probably be aware, I don't think this movie's terrible. But I don't think it's great either. So into the Alley Tally.
This is 512 for contact now. Agreed. 852-676. Approximately 4 tanks and 10 APCs moving directly towards the wood. I'm observing, over.
Hello, Sunray. Fighting on Film has partnered up with warfaremedia.net to give our listeners exclusive discounts on a range of high-resolution Cold War adverts, propaganda, and recruitment posters. From blowpipes to nuclear threats to weapon schematics, Warfare Media has you covered. Visit warfaremedia.net today and use the code FOF20 at checkout for 20% off high-quality Cold War posters. I repeat, FOF20 at checkout. Over.
Roger, out to you, and take action now.
Send us sit rep as soon as possible. Over.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey! It's time for Ally Tally on Fighting on Film.
Rob, do you want to lead us off this week?
Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops and
Frosty Flakes.
Frosty Flakes, yeah. Which, and 5'11 tactical gloves mentioned literally 3 minutes
with the
in.
Mesh. With the Kevlar
with the
mesh.
They're new, they're lovely, yeah. You hear that, all your airsofters and tactical gear loving fans at the moment. Like, it's almost like Alan Partridge with, chocolate oranges are available from Rawlinson's. It's so telegraphed. Like, it's like 12 Strong and it does the Carhartt placement, placement, but worse because they actually name check a brand. Like, so I guess 5'11 paid a little bit to get that in there.
Maybe. What do you get for one 5'11 mention?
Free gloves for everyone on set.
What did Fruit Loops get? What did you get for Fruit Loops?
Kellogg's. Yeah, Kellogg's got the big bag.
Yeah. I think it would have been funny if he'd actually, like, you know, when he rolls down the cliff and he's in the water, it would have been funny if, like, when he's, like, going to pull his Beretta, like, a packet of Fruit Loops, like, fell out of his...
That would have been good. Like, and they all, like, float off. That would have been quite good. Yeah. Or he could have been hiding in, like, with his, holding his breath in a big bit of water and all the Fruit Loops bobble up to the top and some rebels.
He's always hidden in a bush and he's just like
munching.
Slowly eating dry Fruit Loops.
Yeah, that would have been good. No, I thought I'd just get that in there. There's obviously a lot more in the Ally Tally this week, but it was just a bit of a shock to the senses. Cereal brands being name checked and then a major tactical wear company.
I actually liked the scene in the helicopter when they're doing the,
that was quite good.
When they're
quite
on,
well
on
done.
The way. It was a good scene. Like,
reminded me of the start of The Outpost.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm. Yeah. Mm. There's lots of kind of almost familiar bits with this film in terms of the way they approach things, I think.
Mm.
Talk about that in final thoughts. In terms of Ally this week, plenty of interesting stuff. He's got the 338 Barrett MRAD, the Mark 22 mod.
I wonder what
that was. Sniper rifle, Bishop. He's got, the JTAC himself had the NM4 with an EOTech sight. And then later on, he pulls out a very Gucci pair of L3 Harris night vision goggles. They're like quad nods. And they're very expensive.
Very cool. Yeah.
So he was lucky to get those and use them only once and not
put
them on.
These are very, war bro-y type guys, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, they got the caps on, they got their sleeves rolled up, they got tattoos, they're very sort of...
They're very,
gross.
Very, they're very much...
tactical. Would you
tactical,
say
Global War on Terror era Delta Force operator type dudes.
But then they're quite generic with it as well. Like, it's a bit of a weird thing.
They are.
Yeah.
416, HK 416s, I think. I never couldn't really get a good look at the rifles because they move and the...
And there aren't many steels knocking around from this either.
But what they've got, like the guys, the rail, or one's got like a quad rail on there. Mm. What else is in there? I've got to give a shout out to Russell Crowe wearing that weird US Air Force flight suit that's been cut off into a half like a shacket.
Yeah, I like that
deal.
Yeah,
over the top of a Hawaiian shirt.
It's great. Well, it does for his character, doesn't it? It doesn't matter.
And on the Hawaiian shirt, he has rank badges as well.
It's great. It adds so much to him. He's so interesting. I like it.
There's no way that would be authorized, but
he's Reaper man. He could have been a pilot man.
He's a maverick.
He's a walking cliche. His wife's pregnant.
I like the water bottle he makes out of the antenna he makes out of the water bottle.
That's cool. I did like that. I've got a couple of things. I've got Liam Hemsworth uses a lovely captured SKS with a crane stock on it and an AK mag. Yes. Yeah. And it's been painted up like red, and the magazine's painted up. That's really cool because you don't see SKS as much in anything.
No, there's wooden stocked SKSs. The guy shoots with the pistol when he falls into the river has an SKS with a wooden stock with the AK magazine.
It's cool, isn't it? And I like that some of the rebels had old M16A1s, which is nice to see.
Philippines, man. It,
yeah,
That,
yeah, exactly.
They're all the kind of things that would be available.
I like the sort of mixture of civilian-y sort of militarized uniforms that the rebels had too. They look quite believable as an enemy force, like an up for in this situation.
Yeah, I've never really looked into Abu Saif, which is sort of like East Asia ISIS.
Mm. Yeah. They're like the Asian, like sort of offshoot, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah. But the technicals, the Toyota technicals were cool with the M2 Brownings on.
Yeah, really nice.
There was an old Land Cruiser in there as well, which was a nice addition.
Nice to see it.
Mm. What else was it? Oh, there was that Black Hawk that was actually a Huey.
Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting, wasn't it?
Like, the Black Hawk's coming in now. Get to the landing zone to get X-Fil. And they cut to the FX shots of it hovering.
It's not as bad as the gunship in Guy Ritchie's movie that came out a few months ago. It's not as bad as that. I like the drone CG with the Hellfire missiles on it.
That was very good.
CG is decent in this. I'll give it that. And it doesn't overuse it either. As well, I think just enough. Do you want my behind enemy lines extraction trope tally?
What a stupid question to ask. Of course I do.
Of course you do. Right.
Of course.
So I have them in bullet points.
Okay,
so kicking off the trope tally, we have raw soldier being put in with a team of veteran operators. Mission goes bad with a MacGuffin objective, rescue an embedded CIA agent that has little importance to the plot, if at all.
And when he's introduced, you go, who's that guy?
Who's he? Yeah, we haven't seen this.
To the point where the lead character even goes, who's this guy?
Then we have gruff older serviceman being the eyes for the team, i.e., you know, Danny Glover in Bat 21. Then we have one man separated from the rest of his unit being guided by the eyes in the sky. Captured, then immediately broken out of captivity, only to be captured again. Big bad killed in a flurry of violent emotion.
Very much so.
Yeah. We also have villain monologuing to a captured soldier.
Ooh. Yeah. During a torture sequence.
During a torture sequence. Yeah, we have a torture sequence tally as well. Lots of slow motion explosions. And the last one I got was aborted airstrike that could kill our men on the ground.
Yeah.
Danger close.
Danger close. I've got a couple more to add to that. I've got pregnant wife.
Mm-hmm.
I've got pregnant wife.
But I had that under family issues, but I think I might have deleted it by
mistake. That's fair. And then we've got pillow silencer.
Yeah.
That's not how that works, but okay.
Oh, and we also have friendly forces breaking someone out but wearing enemy clothing to blend in for a bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we have that as well.
In this case, yeah.
Yeah, captured enemy weapons as well. That's another trope. Mm-hmm. But then again, we could do a trope tally for every single episode of the show, but we don't do it very often. It's just when they're so telegraphed.
Just when there's a lot of them. More than five.
It's like they had a brochure on cliches and they were like ticking them off as they went along a bit. But no, for me, like the alley this week's, it's fine. Again, you know, there's nothing bad here.
Yeah.
It's competent. Like there's nothing remarkable really. Like, there's nothing you go, oh, wow, they got that in there. It just is what it is. So maybe we could just get into favorite scenes.
Let's do it.
Cool.
So my favourite scene is when Russell Crowe organises the squadron's coffee pods in the cupboard.
That was cool. We've both chosen Crowe moments, haven't we?
Of course we have.
I think we have.
I like that.
The best thing about this film, folks, can you not tell?
I like that. It was a good introduction.
Yeah. You're doing the character. Keurig machine lights. Yeah. Doing all that,
But you know, more seriously, I quite like the nighttime LZ firefight. That was quite
pretty
nicely
decent.
Done.
Yeah.
The CGI was good. Practical stuff was good in it. It felt kinetic. It felt dynamic. It was well shot. It was good. I like that. I mean,
decent tension in that start, like the bit where when it all kicks off. The tension's not bad there.
For me, I would have been happy if the film had ended without the whole he gets captured, gets released, gets captured thing. if it had ended with him just like a couple more firefights along the way, complicating factor, whatever's needed. But you don't need the whole like getting back in the camp and we're going in with.
I always felt like they were going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, I was always like, nothing's going to happen to these lads.
Yeah.
They're too good looking. Yeah.
Well, he does die in the end, but I suppose. But
oh no! Oops.
Not Liam. Luke.
The lad from Dream Team gets killed. No.
No, he survives.
Does he? Oh yeah, of course he does. Yeah. I thought he got shot. Oh, it's the other one that gets shot.
He does get shot, but they all get shot at least once.
They do all get shot. Yeah. Is that literally your favorite scene? Him doing the coffee pots.
Yeah, definitely is.
Amazing. So I've got a couple. I like the use.
Because I know what yours is going to be.
Yeah, I'll get to it.
I can't choose yours. So I have to choose the next best thing.
I'll get to it. I like using the March Madness like basketball game and all the lads
which went on for like 11 hours.
Oh my gosh, the longest.
That's the longest basketball
40-minute basketball game
ever.
But then again, it's Final Four. They could have watched two games in one day, I guess.
Still,
it's March Madness
between them, maybe, but yeah,
because for the uninitiated, March Madness is the end of the NCAA basketball season, and it is a load of games all in March, hence March Madness. And then it culminates with a Final Four, and that's a playoff, and then someone wins. Americans, college like sports is, you know, like the second to professional NFL, NBA, you know, for the listeners who might not know, that's why they're watching a college sports game. Just to sort of, you know, explain that if it needed to be explained.
Sports context with Rob.
Oh God, yeah, it's got to be done. But I like using that because it shows the sort of the mundanity of life on a base like that, in current times.
I liked the fact that they showed us a fictionalized version of the ins and outs of a drone squadron.
Yeah, I quite like that. Yeah, it was quite good. So yeah, getting on to my actual favourite scene. So after he's pulled off the mission, Crow, well, he's not pulled off, he's like replaced. There's another shift, essentially, coming on.
Been on there
a
long time.
A long time.
Like 10 hours over his eight-hour shift.
He needs a break. So it kind of goes against tropiness, where it's like he's not being pulled off because he's done something he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
He's just being pulled off because of rules and regs. So I quite like that. So then after he's pulled out the mission, he goes to do some food shopping for his pregnant wife. And it really just juxtaposes the movie at that point. You get these really like sort of mundane sequence of him just going down the aisle, sticking stuff in his trolley, looking at messages from his wife. There's a funny segment where he explains a really obscure vegan cheese like product to the man at the deli counter. He goes, oh yeah, we've got it right here. And he turns around and he goes, I'd bet money on you not having that. And this is Crow just having fun. You know, he clearly is enjoying these moments.
Putting his specs onto relabels.
Yeah. It does a lot for his character.
Encounters with the public.
He gets 100 times more characterization than anyone in this movie.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, Hemsworth's character, all we know about him is he's been home and he's had the shits. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, and he likes cereal.
And he likes basketball.
Yeah, exactly. Possibly. These men are hollow. Like, the Delta Force members are so hollow, which is a shame. But yeah, like that's interesting because obviously the guys are at that point, they're captured and they've shot a missile at them and it's going to hit them if he doesn't go and stop it because they contact him because of the basketball game. The message doesn't get through. They go, oh, you know, I need to talk to XYZ commander right now. It's so important. He goes, oh yeah, get him on the other line. And he like puts the phone down so he can watch the basketball. So there is a bit of tension there, but I thought it was ballsy to just take your main star lead, not lead, but your biggest name in the movie, completely out of the realm of military-ness and have him just do mundane shopping.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really interesting.
It is. It's cool to take him and put him into a mundane situation juxtaposed against the most tense part, what is supposed to be the most tense part of the film.
Yeah, I like it. It's good. Just the fun little Russell Crowe moments. Which, you know, if anything, this film has given us that. Final thoughts?
I feel like it reaches for something, but it doesn't quite hit. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like a mashup of Lone Survivor, Behind Enemy Lines, Bat 21.
I've literally got that down in my notes, word for word.
Yeah, but with a really dark final act. Because it just so clearly is.
Yeah.
You know, down to sequences of him like falling down stony cliffs, losing his rifle, getting captured, getting beaten up, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And
having to be told what's ahead of him by someone in the sky.
Yeah. It's all there. The one thing to me that is kind of mentioned in that Guardian review we read earlier, and that we mentioned as well, is that that conversation where he talks about the brutality of war.
Yes.
Like the JTAC guy, he says, Hemsworth, says that he thinks drones take the barbarity out of war. But the Delta sergeant is like, no. Do you think war's any less barbaric, whether it's you pulling the trigger or someone, drone operator, pulling the trigger, or it's me going and shooting them?
It starts to say something.
It does. But I thought it was going to lean heavily into it, but it doesn't. It kind of ends it there.
No.
There's like a tiny callback to it when he makes that antenna out of the water bottle, because there's a conversation after the morality element, which takes about 12 seconds. And then there's a bit of a conversation about what happens when the batteries die and your satellite link goes down and all this. And then there's a little tiny callback to that part of the conversation when he makes the antenna, which, it works slightly, but there's no moral weight to the film. And I obviously the film doesn't aim to do that. There's other films that have done that. There's Eye in the Sky 2015 with Helen Mirren and Alan Rickman.
Good, name escaped good me kill for a second with then. Ethan Hawke as well.
There's Good Kill, with Ethan. And then there's that great Sean Bean film. What's that one called? That
you sent Drone.
Me? Drone. Where he's there with like a 2003
Logitech
game controller in his gaming chair. Oh my god, yeah. I love it. The film is just lacking. Like, it's very competently made. It looks good. The CGI is good. There's some good performances put in by the cast, but 98% of them have got nothing to work with.
No.
Crow's got a little bit of backstory. He manages to force a bit of charisma and humor into it.
No one, I've got it down as well. No one has any skin in the game apart from Crow.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, his wife could be called off at any moment. And then I thought that was going to be the jeopardy where the wife would go into labor, there'd be complications. Yeah. He'd have to come
out.
They
set that up so hard just for the jeopardy to be in the supermarket.
I kind of like the fact they don't do that in a way.
I do too.
Because I was so expecting it. But
I'm also kind of happy they don't really try and force a lot of exposition into Hemsworth's character as well. Because
it's just a mission.
If you fumble that, it really does detract from the film. But if you get it right, it lifts it. It's a kind of a gamble, and they kind of played it a bit safe by not giving him too much.
Yeah.
Although he says he's been home because his father died and he's had the shits and he likes Fruit Loops. So,
But then because of that, they all feel a bit hollow.
Yeah.
Like they're not interesting. You said,
we get nothing from the Delta guys.
No, we don't. And I've got that, you know, I've got all that down, like you said, about I've seen all this before in other movies.
Mm.
You know, I almost... you've literally said my final thoughts in a way. No, it's absolutely fine. You know, it's interesting. We both do our notes independently, so we don't do this. But sometimes we really do feel the same way about a movie. I'm as I've said all the way through, it's land of bland. It's just it's absolutely fine. You know, it's like eating a digestive. It's good. It'll fill you up, but it's just a digestive biscuit at the end of the day. There's no more substance there.
It needs a bit of dark chocolate on it.
Yeah, I want a milk chocolate.
Okay, you like the milk chocolate more than the dark.
I want a chalky digestive. I don't want a normal digestive. Dark chocolate digestive is a tier though. They are very good.
That's the tier one of the digestive world.
Okay, well then, you know, a normal chalky digestive is JTAC then, I guess.
Tier two. Okay, cool.
Tier two. but I've got it here. Like, it's just serviceable, low budget, limited release streaming film. And yeah. I'll give it its due. It rattles through its hour and a half incredibly quickly.
It's actually an hour and 53.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't feel that way. Oh, my word. It rattles through it very...
It's paced quite well.
Paced very well. Never slogs, I must admit. It's really not the worst thing you could watch if you had a Prime account. I know we don't do star ratings, but I kind of agree with like the mid-range reviews that I've read. But I kind of wanted it, if it was going to be more cerebral, have more to say, I would have much preferred it to be, and I'm not sure if anyone's done this, because Eye in the Sky is a little bit like it, but it's kind of not at the same time, but have a drone guy in the room, have Russell Crowe in the room, and see the mission on the screen. Don't go on the ground. Have it from his perspective. You know, how does he feel about this? Yeah, kind of like that, but then that's more of a chatty, character-driven piece rather than an action movie. So I completely understand this.
Although that has its own story-driving elements, you know, limitations of a top-down view and that kind of thing. But
there isn't enough of that, and there almost isn't enough on the ground either. Like, there's no happy medium here, but it all kind of works, and it's all kind of fine, and I'm benign to the movie. I think that's probably the best way of summing it up. Like, I don't hate it. I don't love it. It just be a movie, you know?
Yeah, it's a B movie with budget, one big name, competent cast, decent CGI, okay plot. Although I think, as I said earlier, we didn't really need the captured, recaptured.
And
then the climax with the henchman, the antagonist that we'd never met before. We'd never been set up.
And they don't even explain who, like, what he's fighting for in the briefing and stuff. So you don't really have
know that they're ISIS in the Philippines.
No, or exactly.
In, you know, that region. So it's kind of like...
Apart from him saying, like, Allahu Akbar and all that, and, you know, talking about that, it's implied, but...
But even that just has to be the kind of, like...
kind of guy.
Kind of introduced when he's introduced.
Yeah.
Because he isn't introduced prior to that. Scenes at all, really.
But yeah, I think that was Land of Bad 2024, available now on Amazon Prime. No affiliation, but it's on there for you to enjoy.
Do you know what we did forget in the trope tally?
Go on.
Russell Crowe being cast as a US Air Force captain when he's clearly too old and fat.
Yeah, I guess so.
Although, to the film's credit, does explain it in a piece of exposition.
It does. Yeah, and he's the best thing about this movie. And if you enjoy Russell Crowe's work, then I think you're going to like it, if I'm honest. If anything, watch it for Crowe.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, it's a good run up for playing Goering, I guess, because he's the next big role. I mean, what a jump. Yet again, it's just an okay film. And, you know, there's worse ways to spend 2 hours. So as always, thanks for listening to the show. Do check out warfaremedia.net. Use the code FOSS20 for a huge 20% off Cold War posters. Help the show out a lot if you use the link. And we'll catch you next week for more War Movie Reviews. Follow us on the socials, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.